Hello, this is Sentinel Watch, a weekly production of the Christian Science Sentinel. Today we're going to be talking about pausing, but not just pausing in isolation. We're going to be talking about pausing, praying, and proceeding. And this is to join with our fellow Sentinel workers who've been working on a print edition of the Sentinel, which you will see with the cover, The Pause That Empowers Us. So we're going to be talking about active pausing on this program today. And to help me do that, I've enlisted two Christian Science practitioners and teachers. The one from Boca Raton is Mary Trammell. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We can both call you Trinka throughout the program. I know that's a name you're used to using.
That's great.
Great. And our second guest today is Dave Holy from Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Dave.
Hey, hi, Tony. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're really grateful that you're here to join us and to join Trinka. So, Dave, why don't you get going with some thoughts on pausing, praying, and proceeding?
Yeah, okay. I think it's interesting right at the beginning of a new year to think in terms of the pause, because, and particularly a pause that will empower. Rather than just sort of continuing the routine, maybe unthinkingly, I think it's pretty good to remember that progress is a law of God. And so we want to align ourselves if we can, and as often as possible, with God. And that pause can enable us to do that. And I always say to myself, remember to remember who you are. And you're a child of God. You're an idea of God. Hey, Tony, I had one idea. I would just share it at this point if I could.
Sure.
Just something that occurred to me this morning relating to this statement from Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Beholding the infinite tasks of truth, we pause, wait on God, then we push onward. Something occurred to me years ago. I realized that I had a computer that was sort of out of date, and it was not really functioning the way it should have. And I went to my boss and sort of said, hey, I got to have a new computer, but it wasn't forthcoming. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to buy my own computer. And I got on the phone with CompUSA at the time and was placing this order. And then I decided I can't just do this. I have to pause and listen for God's direction. And so I basically hung up the phone and opened Science and Health, opened it up at random. And I came to this little statement that says, incorrect reasoning leads to practical error. And then it says, the wrong thought must be arrested before it takes form. So I thought, oh, well, I guess I'm not buying a computer today. But about a month later, I got to the exact same point of frustration, and I got on the phone again with CompUSA to buy this computer. And then I thought, hold it, I'm going to pause again, even though I really feel it's the right thing to do. And this time I opened Science and Health at random to this phrase, beholding the infinite tasks of truth, we pause, wait on God, then we push onward. And I bought that computer, and it was absolutely clear, and it served me, believe it or not, that computer was in use, I think it was almost 20 years later.
Wow.
And I ended up giving it to a little 10-year-old girl. So I think when you pause, you are empowered in a way that is beyond expectation.
Well, that's wonderful. And yes, we're going to be quoting a lot today, I think, from the book Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer of Christian Science, and from the Bible. And Trinka, would love some thoughts from you as well.
Well, sure. I, too, have been working with that same passage, beholding the infinite tasks of truth. We pause, wait on God. But we don't stay there. We don't stay paused forever. It says, then we push onward until boundless thought walks enraptured and conception unconfined is winged to reach the divine glory. So, you know, as I was thinking about this, what are these infinite tasks? Well, this isn't just the laundry list of things that I do day to day, wash the dishes and cook dinner and what have you. We're talking infinite tasks of truth. And to me, that means lifting every little task that we take on to a divine level, bringing God into the picture, asking God about it, or as the Bible says in so many places, wait on God. And when we do that, thought lifts. All of a sudden, we have a boundless thought. We're seeing God and are enraptured with what we see spiritually. And our conception of anything we are doing is winged to reach the divine glory, so that even if we're going out to the grocery store to buy a new dress or doing something terribly important on an international scale of some kind, still we can bring that to an enraptured level, to an unconfined level of spirituality where we're really seeing divine glory. Well, we can bring it to a level of infinite importance and be more successful with whatever the human task is that we're taking on.
Well, I love that idea. Thank you. And I think what might be helpful for some of our listeners, this divine glory that brings the practical value that you were talking about, I mean, how does that look when we really, if you like, reach that sense of God in our lives? What do we see of God and of our relationship to God?
Well, we certainly see God's reflection, our inseparability from God. We see that we can never pass out of God's care. So let's say we have a decision to make. What school do I go to? Or here's a true story from a friend of mine many years ago. He had two job offers, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast of the United States. And he honestly didn't know which one to take. And to him, it was going to make a huge difference. He was afraid if he made the wrong decision, this would impact his family and his children for decades. So he went to see and confer with a Christian Science practitioner. And the practitioner didn't seem interested at all in all the details of the comparative job offers that he'd had. And he said, let's just pray, the practitioner said this, and see this in a divine context, which they did for a week or two. And my friend went to the practitioner and said, you know, I'm still not clear. Which do I go to, the West Coast or the East Coast? And the practitioner said, it doesn't matter. The prayer is done. You've lifted this to a divine level. Go either way, because you're going to know that your career is solidly based in God. And that's what my friend did. He went to the East Coast, enjoyed about a 40-year career that was very successful. But again, it lifted a human decision to a divine level, and seeing it all as a divine opportunity to express God as this man did through many years of service.
That's really interesting. That actually reminds me a little bit of a story that I really like concerning Mary Baker Eddy, who we mentioned is the author of Science and Health and the discoverer of Christian Science. And it was about a time when she was discussing decision-making in similarly to the way you're talking about it there, Trinka. And I think anyone who knows something of the history of Mary Baker Eddy in her discovery of Christian Science and her role as the founder of the Christian Science Church and all the things she had to do, all the decisions she had to take, everyone familiar with her story would definitely say she was someone who would pause, pray, and proceed. And yet one time she was talking about this whole idea of having to make decisions to one of the people who helped her closely, Adam Dickey. And he reported in his memoir the way she said about taking those decisions. She said, there have been times in working out a problem when I have not known just what step to take, and finding it necessary to make a move of some sort, I have taken a step, as nearly as I could, in the right direction. Perhaps I would find out shortly that it was wrong, but this step gave me a new point of view that I would not have had I not taken it as I did. I would not condemn myself, therefore, for what seemed to be a mistake, but would include it as part of the working out of the problem. And I find that really interesting because sometimes we can get paralyzed with that need to make a decision, can't we? About, as you said with the friend you were just mentioning there, that if I make the wrong decision, it's going to be terrible. And of course, we want to make the right decisions. But I love this sense that God is shepherding us on all the time in the right direction. And if we take a step in the wrong direction, we may be able to see better the right way to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to go forward mindlessly. You want to do that pause, but then you do kind of want to move forward. And as you go, you learn more and you grow. And it's sometimes like the story that Trinka mentioned, it's very momentous. It's East Coast, West Coast. It's a whole life. And, you know, it seems like a half step in the wrong direction is a big problem. But I think more often it's a situation of needing to make a decision now and hoping it's right or wanting it to be right and taking that moment to ask God. And I remember not too long ago, there was something that I was considering buying. And I was kind of, making some little mental kind of lists, you know, this would be good, this might not be good, and this and that. And I was kind of going through the whole thing from a human point of view. And then I decided, oh, but what if I ask God what to do? And bang, it was immediate. There was no further discussion. It was quick. And so I feel that if you take that pause and then move, it's a self-supportive thing.
That's good. I mean, I think we have to meet the fear head on that we're going to make a mistake, fear that we will fail in some way. And that's what the following sentence or so seems to say in Science and Health, where Mrs. Eddy says, in order to apprehend more, we must put into practice what we already know. We must recollect that truth is demonstrable when understood, and that good is not understood until demonstrated. If faithful over a few things, we shall be made rulers over many, but the one unused talent decays and is lost. Well, that gets us to Jesus' wonderful parable of the talents. You remember that, where an employer talks about handing over his investments to three of his employees. So he gives one of them five talents, one two, and one. And the one with five talents invests them, earns another five. The one with two invests those and earns another two. But the worker who got just one talent was so afraid he was going to lose it that he buried it. And when his boss, his master, returned, he was not happy. And he took the one talent that the guy had who had buried his talent and gave it to the guy who had 10 talents, who had earned 10 talents. And I did a little research on that with the Interpreter's Bible, and one of the scholars made such an interesting comment. He said, you know, to me, this parable of Jesus was really written for what he calls one-talent men and women. They're the ones that Jesus wanted to reach to tell them, we need you to invest in this kingdom right now. You're the ones to help usher in the kingdom. Not many of us are five-talent people, like Shakespeare's and Einstein's. But, okay, if we've just got one talent, fine. Be faithful over that, over the few things. Use it, and that will usher in the kingdom. So it's interesting that Mrs. Eddy goes from this comment that we based our program on here to that review of the parable of the talents. And I think there's something there, too, that each one of us has at least the one talent that God has given us, And we need to have the courage to use it, to invest it, and to bring forward the cause of the kingdom.
You know, I find that so liberating. I'm sure many listeners will, because sometimes when you read that story of the talents, you think, that's so unjust that the person with only one should lose it. But I love it that it's actually a story to encourage everybody to recognize that they do have at least that one talent, and they should know it and confidently go forward and be a blessing to others as well as themselves by applying it or sharing it or using it. And that does bring me to something I've been thinking about with the whole idea of pausing, and that is the difference between the sense of pausing while you're waiting on circumstances and pausing while you're waiting on God. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that Christian Science can be so helpful at, just helping us know that we really can pause and wait on God, which doesn't mean we're kind of waiting for God to do something. We're kind of waiting to become conscious of the very nature of God and what God does, because we know when we see God in that light, we will understand ourselves better as the spiritual expression or identity of God. And as we've said in examples you've already given, we will find that we know the way to go forward.
Yes, that will come to us as we wait on God. I think that phrase, wait on God, is important. We're not waiting for the mortal circumstances to change. We're waiting on God and for the moment that we will know it's right to move forward.
And God is immediate. So the waiting doesn't have to take a long time. You know, one of the examples from the Bible, it actually appears in all four of the Gospels, is when Jesus fed the multitude. He didn't say, oh, you're right, we don't have enough. He said, what do we have? And then based on that, we're gonna move forward. And so it might have simply been, you know, what we have is one talent. Okay, good, great. Let's make the most of this one talent. And it's gotta be enough.
That's right.
Because we wouldn't be in a situation where we're not gonna have enough.
And we can have the courage to wait if we need to. I was thinking the children of Israel patiently waited 40 years in the wilderness with God sustaining them and preparing them to enter their promised land. But they hung in there. God had promised he would feed them day by day by day, and he did, and they faithfully followed.
They did, and it just represents the kind of spiritual growth we all have to go through. So sometimes we have to wait, not because God doesn't immediately have the good that we need, but sometimes to cross that threshold, if you like, to where we're ready to receive that good in the right way and use it in the right way, that we need to be shedding some of the thoughts that don't really belong to us as the children of God, some of the thoughts that are really a more material sense of ourselves, which isn't really the right sense of ourselves to have. And so that pause, again, is an active pause. It's a pause where things that are needing to be seen and seen through as not really representing who we are as God's child will lose their hold, first on our thoughts and then in our experience. And then we will be ready for whatever promised land is awaiting us as the next step of our progress. As you said, whether it's a career, whether it's a companionship, whether it's a home, different things like that, I've, you know, certainly found in my experience, I needed to go through some growing understanding of what it really means to be a child of God, to be ready to receive those gifts in the way I was going to most enjoy having them.
That's good.
You know, it just occurs to me that those 40 years were maybe not that many years if you consider what they were coming out of, which was 400 years of slavery, and what they were coming into was freedom. And maybe, you know, it just took a little adjustment. And maybe that the beauty of these pauses is that we're yielding to the adjustment that the mind is, you know, forcing on us, and we need to, you know, accept. You know, Mary Baker Eddy talks about this in Science and Health on page 266. She says, when this hour of development comes, even if you cling to a sense of personal joys, spiritual love will force you to accept what best promotes your growth. I had an occasion here just Tuesday of this week to speak to a class. It was a philosophy class. And I just speak a little bit about Christian Science in this philosophy class. And as I've thought about that experience since, it has occurred to me that there was a lot of thought there that just wasn't prepared to make the kind of leap that I was suggesting was possible. And I think my life and my experience stood as a bit of a phenomenon and to those guys rather than as a present possibility. But I think if we are willing to pause, listen, allow an idea, a new idea, a fresh idea to come to thought, and then move a little bit, move a little forward. And actually, even with the children of Israel, I don't think they stayed in one place for those 40 years. They kind of wandered around. And so there were obviously little bits of progress that were occurring during that time.
I love that idea that 40 years is a brief pause if you've been waiting for 400 years. That does make sense. I hadn't quite thought of it that way before.
Yeah.
Well, and another example of figures in the Bible that had to wait were the marriage of Jacob and Rachel. And you remember Jacob had cheated his brother pretty badly and not been honest and forthright. But then he escaped and he wanted to marry what he considered sort of the love of his life, Rachel, in this new land. Worked 7 years, thought he would be able to marry her, but he was given another wife instead, secretly and stealthily. So Jacob had to wait to be married to the love of his life, Rachel. But you know, that wait brought him a lot of spiritual progress. And Jacob was a new man. He was renamed Israel. So there again, that's that evolution of the real man within Jacob that this pausing, enforced pausing, brought him.
Yeah, and it's lovely to think that when it seems like enforced pausing, as you said, that maybe there is a reason that will bless us as well as others if we take that time to really get to know God better and understand our relationship to God better. And I think one of the things that's always helped me is that when I know myself better as God's child, I'm much better prepared to see the other individual as God's child. And knowing that spiritual identity, that we're all really created in God's spiritual image and likeness, to see someone else in that light is worth waiting for.
Yes, yes. You know, something else I thought about was in Mary Baker Eddy's poem, Feed My Sheep. The first line is, Shepherd, show me how to go o'er the hillside steep, how to gather, how to sow, how to feed thy sheep. And, you know, when one is pausing, making the decision perhaps, and preparing for the next step, what better way to handle it than to ask the shepherd, not necessarily where to go, but how to go, and not what to gather, but how to gather, how to sow. The way that one would do it makes all the difference with the way one does anything. Do we do it with Christ-like love? Do we do it with care, with a healing touch, or not? So a waiting, a pause, can be an opportunity to really think about the how with which we're proceeding. Do we have the how right? Are we doing it for the right reasons? Is the Christ impelling us?
One thought that was occurring to me a little bit last night is another little story about Jesus where Martha, who was troubled about many things, was complaining to Jesus because her sister Mary wasn't helping her with these many tasks. And Jesus said, but But Martha, she's chosen that good part that shall not be taken from her. And that, to me, that good part is what we're talking about here. It's just that pause. I mean, we all have many tasks, but we can take that good part, and it can't be taken from us. It's that moment where we're going to listen and then proceed. And I feel like it doesn't free us from the tasks. What's the word? It was the way you put it earlier. You walk enraptured and you walk unconfined and you've got boundless thought. And so, it seems to me, and this might get into another little branch of this discussion, it seems to me that the demands of the many tasks can sometimes be so all-consuming that we don't think we've got the time to take that good part, and that we are so busy doing these tasks that there is no time to pray. If I had time to pray, I would pray. I don't have time to pray. I have to work. But I think one of the things that, I just read it again this morning, the June 2nd, 1945 issue of the Christian Science Sentinel includes the story of a ship fitter back in 1945 in a big military Navy ship. And he was doing some welding in there. And he realized that he locked himself into this chamber. And he was kind of panic-stricken about it. And it said, a fierce mental battle was fought in my consciousness inside that cold tank. It was not easily ended or very rapidly. Aggressive mental suggestions sought to gain control over me by fear. But thank God I knew the counterfacts of every lie. And then he listed a few. But then he says, it finally came to me that I must stop my human efforts and trust wholly in God. It required an actual physical effort to take my hands away from the bolts, but I finally put them down in my lap, and then I spoke to God. I said, God, I'm listening. The change was wonderful. He said, an absolute calmness, a sense of peace, a certainty of God's nearness, a positive assurance of deliverance came. I waited and I heard the direction, take out the pin in the hinge. Well, and then he got additional direction and so forth, and he was free. He was totally free. Mm. But it took a real effort to stop the human effort. And I think we want to be willing to do that. And the beginning of the year is a perfect time to just take a pause and say, I'm willing to do the tasks, but I'm also going to have that good part.
That's wonderful. You know, on a much simpler, less dramatic level, I had an experience kind of like that. It was about 35 years ago, but I had just finished my graduate degree and was looking for a job. Of course, this was before I was a Christian Science practitioner. And the word was there just weren't any jobs available in my field. And as one person where at a university where I interviewed for a job said to me, well, you know, trouble is we just have too many PhDs. We don't need you. And that was a little disheartening to hear about. But in any case, I became more and more disturbed about this. And one particular day I was going to set off to go from university to university applying for jobs in my field, and it came to me, get out of this car and go back in your house and pray. You're disturbed. I was physically not feeling good either. So I just sort of vowed to myself I would take a month to just pray about the right next steps. I didn't think of that quote concerning pausing, but that's what I was committing to. And I did take that wonderful month of just prayer, study of Mary Baker Eddy's works and the Bible. And I really saw a purpose for me as for all of God's ideas. I couldn't fail to have a way to serve God. And so a month later, I thought, now is the time to go forward and make an application or two. And I got in the car. I didn't know where I was going to go, but I drove 50 miles north of Miami, where we were living at that time, and found a small state university and just cold turkey, as we put it, walked in the door and introduced myself to people in the department that I could conceive being in. Within a week, they called me back and asked me to teach one course. And by the end of the following year, they'd offered me a full-time appointment in my field. And that was just such a clear case for me of my needing to stop, like you were saying, Dave, all the human activity and the frustration and such, and pause, wait on God, listen, and then move forward. And it really worked.
That's beautiful, Trinka. And Dave, just one other question. One of the things I'm thinking about here is that sometimes the pause might come about because we're not really wanting to let go of something. And so the pause isn't necessarily that there's something good stopping us from going forward. It's that we're holding ourselves back by holding on to something. Is there any experience you've had where that's been the case and you've had to kind of see through that?
Yes, actually. Kind of my whole life has been like that. Like, I've always enjoyed where I am, and I've never really wanted to move to the next thing. And yet, Mary Baker Eddy is pretty clear on that God forces us to accept that which promotes our growth. And so I'm getting a lot better at it, actually. And I'll give you one quick example. When the time came for me to move to Chicago, which was around 10 years ago now, it wasn't something I wanted to do. It wasn't something I had expected to do, but it became kind of a necessity given the next steps I was taking sort of professionally as a Christian Scientist. And so I was willing to do it. And I was just willing to be available to God in wherever he needed me to be. That was kind of it. And you know, that little story in the Bible where the young man went to see Jesus and he said, "What do I have to do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said, "Well, you have to obey the commandments." And he said, "Well, I already do that." And he said, "Then you got to sell everything and give it to the poor and come and follow me." And that was heartbreaking to the young man. The young man went away sorrowing because he had these great possessions. And I felt like that guy. I had these great possessions. But I thought, you know what? I'm not going to turn away from the call, from a divine call, because I have possessions. And so I didn't. And I said, okay, I'll go. And you know, it's now been about 10 years. It's just been definitely a right move. And so I've come to accept the inevitable, I guess you could say, but I've come to accept it more willingly. Like, I remember the morning I sold my motorcycle. I'd had this thing fixed. It was a beautiful bike. They rolled it out. And I thought to myself, what a beautiful motorcycle. If I were buying a motorcycle, I'd buy that one.
Oh.
And then the thought came to me, sell that bike right now. And I thought, oh, I can't do that. But I did. I was willing to do it. And you know, I thought, I might regret this, and if I do, I'll buy another one. But I never have. It was like a step that was necessary and right, and I sort of, rather than dragging my heels on it, I just kind of said, okay. And so I guess it becomes easier as you go forward. And as you experience success with yielding, I think you become, you know, quicker to yield. There is one real quick thing, though, that I could mention, would like to mention.
Yep.
And that is when I was in graduate school some years ago, I had to register every term. And before I registered, I would pause. Not long, maybe 30 seconds, maybe 1 minute, and I would just say, okay, God, this is your program. I'll buy the books. I'll take the classes. I'll show up. I'll pay the tuition, but it's your show. This is your program. And if you want me to take one class, two classes, or zero, I'm good. And then I would just register. And all that time, and it took, I think it was about 5 years, I never had a problem. I never had a conflict, time conflict with my work or anything else. And I directly attribute that to taking just a moment every term to give it to God.
It's great.
There's a wonderful quote that I've always appreciated, which I think captures something of what you were saying, Dave, there, which is, again, from Science and Health with Key to Scriptures. It says, willingness to become as a little child and to leave the old for the new renders thought receptive of the advanced idea. And goes on to say, gladness to leave the false landmarks and joy to see them disappear. This disposition helps to precipitate the ultimate harmony. And I think sometimes in our human experience, we know what we think we want, in the next phase of our life. But actually, that ultimate harmony, to me, that's just the goal of growing to the point where you're so conscious of God that there's nothing else that you know but the divine love that is God. And you're beginning to really experience yourself as God's creation. And that's kind of the high goal before us that I think then leads us to whatever practical steps we should take to both get what's appropriate, but also especially to be able to give what we are able to give.
That's true, Tony. And one of the things that Trinka mentioned was that they didn't seem to need another PhD or something like that. And what she said a little later in her comment was, I knew there was a place for what I had to give. She was a unique individual. And that place is certain. And we just can be led to it because it's like a divine mind unfoldment that has prepared us for the place and is preparing the place for us. And so we're not trying to fit in. We're trying to understand where we belong.
Good.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mrs. Eddy's statement in Miscellaneous Writings says, be active, and however slow, thy success is sure. Toil is triumph, and thou hast been faithful over a few things. That kind of ties in with the one talent guy, you know, who says, okay, I've just got the one talent, but I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to use it. I'm going to let God guide me how to use it because it's from God. And to be active in doing that, and step by step will be shown, our toil will bring triumph.
Well, I love that. And maybe that's a good way to begin to wind up here. Just going back to the sense that we're talking about an active pause, a pause where we may not be taking a step to get our career in check. We might not be able to take a step to get the home we want or whatever it is that we seem to be needing to deal with. But the activity is the consciousness that we're filling up with a clearer sense of what God is and how we relate to God and how we can look out and see everyone else in that spiritual light, that spiritual perspective. So we're not talking about ever being inactive in terms of prayer and spiritual understanding and those things we need, but sometimes to stop the human activity long enough to really be clear about what it is that God is and what it is God wants us to do.
Yes.
You know, you remind me of a story I heard just maybe a month ago. It was a woman who had left her apartment for a year and a half. I don't know if she rented it out or what. But when she returned a year and a half later, she had to get into this storage locker because everything she had was in this storage locker. The condo was empty. And she went to the storage locker and realized, oh, I don't know the combination to this lock. It was too late in the day to call a locksmith. And she said, I have to get away from this situation. And she went back to the empty condo, leaned against the wall, and slid down the wall till she was sitting on the carpeting. And she began to clear her thought. And all those thoughts of being limited, locked out, abandoned, you know, in the wrong place, uncomfortable, all those thoughts, she was able to silence by turning to God. As she said, it became so quiet. It's almost like that fellow in the ship I mentioned. He said it became very quiet. And then into that quiet, she said, I heard three numbers. There were three numbers in my thought. And she thought, I bet those are my numbers. And she went down and went to the lock and put those three numbers in the lock, and it opened up. And so, and by the way, one of the things that she refuted while she was quieting thought was this idea that there's a law of probability that is somehow in force here. And she had to replace that law of probability with the law of God, the law of comfort, the law of every need being met and being met immediately. And so she replaced the false law or the human law with the law of God. And in doing so, she ended up having a mattress to sleep on that night.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. That consciousness of the law of God at work 24 hours, 7 days a week is with each and every one of us. It's we can all be conscious of that divine law. So let me just ask you both to wrap up quickly with a quick thought. One thing that comes to me is we've talked about turning to God, and you've shared wonderful experiences how as you turned to God, the answer came. And I think some of our listeners might be thinking, okay, tell me what it's like to turn to God. What are you seeing in consciousness that's different to what I'm seeing when I'm just going around my life trying to get things done? What is it that brings that the rapture you mentioned forward? You know, what's it feel like? If you can give me a quick thought about that from your experience, that would be great.
Well, for me, it's just a quick acknowledgement that I am being guided. I am being utilized. I am being governed and guided forward. And it's not me that's doing it. I'm part of something larger. Like Jesus said, I can in my own self do nothing. And then he said, but as I hear, I judge. My judgment is just. So there is this sort of pause to recognize that it's not him, but then there's a movement forward. My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. So for me, it's simply that. It's like, okay, God, how do you want to do this?
That's great. For me, I think when I really need to establish peace and maybe calm thought, I just need to stop and remember how much God loves each one of us, and specifically how much God loves me, and that God isn't somewhere far away. He's as close as my own thinking, as close as anyone's own thought. It doesn't take even a millisecond to find God, because God's right there in our own thought for us to turn to. And that always helps me get a grip on things and move forward.
Well, thank you both so much. I think it's a lovely way to end, just to share that perspective so that people listening can know that they too can really feel that deep spiritual peace in their pores, where they just feel God's love and know that they are God's loved creation, and know that the answer they need will come as they feel that sense of their oneness with God. So thank you, Trinka. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you, Dave.
Thanks so much for having us, Tony.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. It's been a pleasure for me too.
Thank you both for joining us for this edition of Sentinel Watch, a weekly production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Tony Loebel.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.